Thank you and good morning. It's a privilege to be here with you. I'm Caleb. I lead the Mariners Church in Huntington Beach. If you are newer to Mariners, welcome. And you should know that there are four Mariners churches. There are two in South County, the one that you're sitting in, and then I lead one that's in Huntington Beach. And I have my wife here with me, my boys over screwing around in one of the kids' rooms. And we have been leading that church in Huntington Beach for 4.5 years now. It's been an awesome journey. For the past 2 years, we've been desperately trying to get new space because we've outgrown the little performing arts theater at the Central Library that we've been meeting at. We do 4 services there all day long. We're there. We set up. We tear down. I get to actually watch football tonight because I don't have a 4th service. Like I typically do in Huntington Beach. But for 2 years, we've been looking for a new location, and we finally have it. We're going to be taking over the Regency Movie Theater at the corner of Beach and Warner, which is the 2nd busiest intersection in Orange County. So that is so exciting. So grateful for that. And I am grateful to you. I am grateful to Kenton and Mariners for embracing this Favor with Kings project. You know, Kenton is my mentor, and when your mentor says that your work is awesome, that means a lot. And he has just so embraced it, and you have, and I'm so grateful to be a part of it. You pour your heart and soul into something like this, and then to get emails from many of you, or posts on social media, or stories, or the word that you've sent some to friends and family around the country, it's very meaningful. I am very grateful. And I brought this one actually to give away. If there's someone that doesn't have one yet, you can have it right here. This is for you. I actually autographed it, so you should watch your back when you're going to your car later, because that's very valuable. That autograph and $7 will get you coffee at Fashion Island later. So you got that going for you. We've been in this series, Favor with Kings. Nehemiah has been our guide. And we have said, and I believe with all my heart, that you have a mission from God that motivates you and matters to someone else. And if you are here for the first time in church ever, I'm glad that you're here. And I want you to know that you too have a mission from God that motivates you, that will motivate you, and matter to someone else. And if you're here, and you haven't been in church for a long time, perhaps because you went through something difficult in life, maybe you were burned by a church somewhere else, maybe you went through something and you felt judged by other people, or you just felt like you didn't belong anymore, welcome back. I'm glad that you're here. And you too have a mission from God. He is not done with you yet. And we've used the story of Nehemiah and this tool of Favor with Kings to show us or to remind us that we all have something unique that God intends to do through us. And you might think it should be this big, glamorous thing out there somewhere because it should make you famous, or you saw someone else do something impressive and you want to do that impressive thing, but it might not be that. It might be a project, it might be an opportunity that's already right in front of you. A woman in my life group was saying that she's had a vision for a while to serve children that were in need, that she wanted to rally and do fun stuff for them and give them a break in the afternoon, apart from their difficult lives. But then just a couple of weeks ago, she realized she's supposed to start at home in her own blended family, which has its own challenges, as many of you know. Whatever it is, if it starts in your home, if it's at your workplace, if it's leaving your workplace and starting a new endeavor, if it's a ministry affiliated with the church or somewhere else that you're plugged in, you have a mission from God that motivates you and matters to somebody else. And Nehemiah has shown us through this journey that he leveraged bad news for the sake of something good. That we don't have to be afraid of bad news Bad news is actually just the beginning. It's the genesis of breakthroughs. And Nehemiah cultivated conviction. He prayed and he even fasted. Fasting means that you go without because you believe that God has something more for you. And he prayed for favor with the most powerful man in the world at the time, the king of Persia, Artaxerxes. God gave him favor with that man. And at the same time, he prepared and he was ready. And then he left the castle to follow the calling. And he went 800 miles to Jerusalem, where his ancestors were from, to begin to motivate the people to rebuild the wall that would protect them, that represented their identity as a community. And that's where we're going to pick up the story this morning. Today, we're going to talk about how we stay the course, how you keep on and stay focused even when things are difficult or tough. In a word, persevere. Years ago, I was invited with another dozen young adults to go to this retreat on the Chesapeake Bay on the East Coast. And there were about a dozen of us in our 20s, and then there were a couple of mentors that were there, speaking to us, guiding us, coaching us. One of them was Oz Guinness. Oz is famous in some circles for being a philosopher and an author, but even more famous for being from the Guinness beer family. And Oz was there and he shared his life and his journey with us, and I don't remember anything that Oz said except one thing. Oz told us one of those evenings that he and his friend would meet together. They committed to meet together years ago, and they would meet together twice a year, every year, somewhere in the world, because his friend was from New York City and Oz lived in England. And they would meet together two times a year somewhere in the world, maybe a coffee shop in the States, maybe a pub somewhere in Europe, maybe somewhere else. But when they met, they would catch up. They would talk about old times. They would ask how the family is doing, but they would never leave one of those meetings without asking each other one simple question. Is the revolution still on? Is the revolution still on? Which is a question that asks a bunch of other questions. What he's asking is this still worth it? Is it still worth giving our lives to? Do we still believe in the cause? Is it still worth the sacrifices that we're making to advance good in our spheres of influence? Is the revolution still on? Is God still in control despite the craziness? Does Jesus still win? Does love still trump all the pain that we see in the world around us? Is the revolution still on? That's the question for our time together this morning. That's my question for you. Is the revolution still on? Is the revolution still on in your home? Are you still willing to persevere for the good of your family? Is the revolution still on in your workplace? Are you still committed to influencing people and not just profits? Is the revolution still on in your neighborhood and in the other areas where you have influence? Is it still worth it? Do you still believe? Will you still continue? Will you persevere? We're going to look at the story of Nehemiah a little bit in chapter 6, a little bit in chapter 4. This is chapter 6, verse 1. Nehemiah recounts for us in what he calls his memoirs, his detailed journal of the most significant events that happened in his life that have been passed down for generations for us, that we can have a practical template of what it looks like to chase after your mission from God. This is in chapter 6. When the word came to Sanballat, Tobiah, Geshem, the Arab, and the rest of our enemies, that I had rebuilt the wall and not a gap was left in it, though up to that time I had not set the doors in the gates, Sanballat and Geshem sent me this message. Come, meet us, let us meet together in one of the villages on the plain of Ono. So here's what's happening. Nehemiah had galvanized the people, he had rallied the troops, and they had built this thing, and there's almost no more gaps. It's the fourth quarter. It's the gun lap. They're almost done. All he has to do is finish the gates and the doors. But at the end of the race, in the fourth quarter, that's when the enemy really steps up his game too. He starts to panic. He says, they're almost done. They've almost accomplished this mission. And so he cranks up the heat, and he sends word to Nehemiah, and he says, come on, meet us in the plain of Ono. And what you need to hear is that there's always an oh no. The momentum is building. You've made headway. You've had blessing. The resources are there. And then, oh no! That guy again. Oh no! The paycheck went away. Oh no! This roadblock, this hurdle, this tragedy, this stumbling block, this issue. When you're on a mission from God that motivates you and matters to other people, you will have setbacks. You will experience adversity. And maybe when the finish line is just around the bend, you don't even know how close you are, but you're right there. You'll have an oh no moment. And you will need to persevere in the face of it. Perhaps for some of you, that oh no moment is the voices in your head that you just can't shake, telling you you might as well self-sabotage because you don't deserve this anyway. It's probably not going to work out. There's an oh no moment, but here's how Nehemiah responds. He says, but they were scheming to harm me. So I sent messengers to them with this reply. I am carrying on a great project and cannot go down. Can you read that with me, just the part in bold? Let's read that together. I am carrying on a great project and cannot go down. Why should the work stop while I leave to go down to you? Four times they sent me the same message. Each time I gave them back the same answer. I am carrying on a great project. I cannot go down. There will always be somebody trying to pull you down. There will always be something trying to trip you up and pull you backwards when you're on a mission from God. But you can't go down. You can't leave the work. You can't leave the project. There's something that wants to pull you down to its level or to their level. There's something that wants to pull you down to compromise, to not finishing strong. There's something that wants to pull you down to fearing man, people, more than you fear God. There's something that wants to pull you down, and you can't go down. You can't go with them. You can't meet them there. You're on a mission from God. It's not even about you. It's about other people. You're serving someone else. It's bigger than you, and you are not finished yet. But sometimes, you might ask, sometimes there's a good reason to stop, right? There's got to be. Sometimes God closes a door and you need to go a different direction. The way I coach people when I'm asked about advice for taking big leaps of faith and taking next steps and leaving this place and going to this place, I always say this: make sure that you're running to something, not from something. You don't want to run from something. Because if God has put you on this path, if he's put you on this track, there will be pain, there will be adversity, there will be difficulty. Don't run from that. Only run to what you see God doing. Only run to where you see the doors opening. You're on a mission from God. It needs to be worth it. The work that you're doing, it needs to be worth it. It needs to be worth the sacrifice. Another way of saying that is this: do work worth suffering for. Here are a few questions. If you wrestle with that, if this is my mission from God, is this worth suffering for? Here are a few questions I would consider you to ask yourself. The first is this: am I committed to the cause even if I get no credit? Even if someone else gets the credit for your work, and their name is elevated and not yours, is it worth it? If so, you might be on a mission from God. Another question to ask yourself: does the job facilitate the dream? And this is important because some of you may have a vision or a dream that breaks your heart, that you know you've got to do this thing, but it's not going to pay your bills. And those practical needs need to be met in another way. So is the dream worth doing the hard work of making money or earning a living some other way to facilitate you doing the dream? Another question. Does my family believe in the vision, or are they becoming resentful? This one might sting a little bit, but you have to ask it. Because if you are losing your family, you are missing the point. The mission is about the people, and your family is in that number. Pray for favor with your family and take them with you on this adventure. Last question. Will my pain lead to progress for others? I can take the heat if it means healing for someone else. I can handle criticism if it creates progress for people. I have two younger brothers. One's name is Josh. He's in the middle. The youngest one is Aaron. Josh, when he was in high school, he was a good football player. He played quarterback for our team. It was Claremont High School, about 45 minutes east of here. And going into Josh's junior season, he planned to be the starting quarterback for Claremont High School. And so he worked hard. He was prepared. But he also felt like God was telling him that he was supposed to serve other people in that high school. Specifically, he felt like he was supposed to volunteer his free period to work in a special ed class with kids with special needs. And so when he could have been, and when his coaches encouraged him to use that free period to lift some weights, to get in the gym, to train for football, he chose not to do that. He was committed to football, but he also felt like he had a mission beyond football. And so he used that free period and he volunteered in this classroom. And there were times when he didn't know if it was the right thing. Should I even be doing this? He would ask me. I don't even know if these kids care that I'm there half the time. But slowly over the course of that fall season, he built relationships, he built friendships with those students. One of them in particular, her name was Adriana. She's quadriplegic, bound to a wheelchair. She would try to talk and communicate. I couldn't understand her when I was with her, what she was saying, but Josh could. Josh learned. He could understand the things that she was saying, and he would bring her to the house sometimes in the big blue family Suburban so that we could put the wheelchair in the back, and he would bring her to the house, and she would have family dinner because her home life wasn't great. And I watched that relationship develop, and I watched that girl when she smiled. And to see her life change. And then I watched as my brother made arrangements for the whole class to get a bus to come to one of his football games. And he sat him behind one of the end zones. And I remember watching him as he ran over to them in all of his gear. And he gave them all high fives down the line before the game. And it was probably the highlight of their school year. And my brother had to endure a little bit of teasing from other athletes. And my brother had to endure a little bit of joking from coaches. But my brother persevered. And he loved those kids well. And the next year, his senior year, there were about 5 football players volunteering in classrooms with special needs kids. He made an impact. And he made an impact on me. My brother Josh, with his example, he showed me something about God's love for me. Because I don't have a physical handicap, but I feel broken inside sometimes. I'm aware that there's something wrong with me. I'm aware that I have something broken in here and I can't fix it. And that in the middle of that brokenness and that insecurity and that fear of what people think about me, that there was a God who came to this earth. He put on skin for me, not just pushing me around, but giving me new life. That he sacrificed his own life for me. That he persevered and paid the ultimate price as an expression of his love for me. And then, not only that, but I envision that he pulls me close, this God, this Jesus. And he says, look, my love for you has nothing to do with your performance. I love you no matter what. I died for you before you could do anything. You can't earn anything. And I do have a mission for you. I do have something for you to do. I do have a mission that will motivate you and will matter to somebody else. And you know what? I am even going to leverage that brokenness in you. I'm even going to use your weakness so that I can be strong in the middle of it. I'm even going to use that darkness in you and that darkness in your past and leverage it and bring light to the world around you. I'm going to use that fear and that insecurity. I am going to use you. I'm going to give you a mission that will motivate you, and it will matter to somebody else. Back to Nehemiah chapter 4, verse 1 says this. When Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became very angry and was greatly incensed. He ridiculed the Jews, and in the presence of his associates in the army of Samaria, he said, "What are those feeble Jews doing? Will they restore their wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they finish in a day? Can they bring the stones back to life from those heaps of rubble, burned as they are?" Tobiah the Ammonite, who was at his side, said, "What they are building, even a fox climbing up on it, would break down their walls of stones." That's not true, by the way. A fox is just a little guy, and this is a massive wall. These stones are the size of one of your vehicle, your car. They're not little red bricks. These are massive stones. So these guys, these enemies, are trying to intimidate. They're using hyperbole, even though it's completely irrational, to try to plant seeds of doubt and to try to convince Nehemiah and the other people that this is a worthless cause. You should abandon it. They're trying to prey on the weak-minded, provoke a reaction. It's irrational, it's dramatized noise, but doesn't it often align with our fears and the tapes that we play in our own heads? That's what these guys are preying on. And that's what you can't fall for, because it's irrational, it's ridiculous. And you need to keep your eyes on the God who put you on the mission in the first place. Nehemiah says this. This is his response. He prays. He says, "Hear us, our God, for we are despised." Wait a minute. Isn't it people who are harassing him? Why doesn't he go fight them? Because he knows it's better to take this matter straight to God. He doesn't indulge the people. In fact, Nehemiah, if he was coaching us, he might say this: don't hate the haters and don't give them headspace. Don't even give them real estate in your head. Take the matter to God. He's got this. They're just spouting irrational nonsense anyway. Don't even give it headspace. Nehemiah understands something that the Apostle Paul also talked about. He says, "For we are not fighting against flesh and blood enemies, but against evil rulers and authorities of an unseen world, against mighty powers in this dark world, and against evil spirits in the heavenly places." There are unseen things. There is an enemy. There is a resistance. We take those matters to God because he's bigger than all of that, and he understands the things that we can't understand and can't see. And then Nehemiah does something else. Verse 8, they all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and to stir up trouble against it. But we prayed to our God and posted a guard day and night to meet this threat. Nehemiah prays to God, and he posts a guard. There's a spiritual aspect, and there's a practical aspect. You pray, and you post a guard. In this two-year journey of trying to figure out where our church would meet and have our next ministry home, there were so many ups and downs and dead ends, so much difficulty and drama. There were times I felt like, this is never going to happen. We should just forget about it. This is too hard. This is such a pain. Every time I would try to force myself to bring it back, even though I was discouraged. God, this is bigger than me. I'm on your mission. You're going to have to do this. And then at the same time, I would try to influence whatever I could control. Have a conversation, send an email, ask for help. You pray and you post a guard. You do the spiritual thing and you do the practical thing. It's both and. That's Nehemiah's example to us. Because Nehemiah continues to push forward. And he pushes forward because he looks back and he realizes that God has been faithful all this way. He'll be faithful this time too, and he'll be faithful in the future. And so we press on. You are doing a good work, friends. Don't give up. Don't quit now. It's worth it. Paul wrote in a letter to people in Galatia, he said this, "Let us not become weary in doing good. For at the proper time, we will reap a harvest if we do not give up." Notice, at the proper time. Not in your time. In the proper time. When he has designed, when he sees fit, when he teaches you what he's teaching you, when you learn the lessons that he's wanting you to learn, when the pathway opens up, when he aligns the other factors that you're not even aware of, in the proper time, if you keep doing good and don't give up, you'll reap the benefits. It's going to work out. This is his mission to begin with. My son, Jack, is 3.5. Jack's 3.5. Henry is 1.5. And Jack, they're so much fun. They're so much fun. Jack is, he's so pumped on Halloween right now. He doesn't understand it, but he knows he's got a costume, okay? And he was in Target with my wife. That's her weak place. And so he got a costume early. And so he's so pumped on Halloween. This is Wednesday morning. He comes down. We have one of those special alarm clocks. Genius. If one of you invented this, you're a genius. Where the alarm clock turns green at the appropriate time. And so it turns green and he knows, I can go out of my room now. And he honors this green alarm clock. And so at 7 a.m. when the light turns green, he comes downstairs. But on Wednesday morning, he came downstairs in full costume. Did that himself. Somehow he put that thing on himself and he comes down. And that's by my bedside. I'm reading in bed and I'm taking that picture with my phone in bed. Wednesday morning. And he comes down so excited, he says, come on, get up, Daddy, get up. We've got to get the bad guys. And I said, okay, Jack, sounds good, buddy. And then I hear his little brother, Henry, crying. And I say, should we get Henry first? And with all seriousness, he goes, yes. The dragon's got him. We need to get him out of jail. Jail for Jack is the crib. It makes sense, right? So I say, yes, Jack, let's go rescue Henry from the dragon and get him out of jail. So we go upstairs. We walk into Henry's room, and Henry's standing there in jail, excited to see us. Jack storms in with his shield, waving it around, kicking, fighting off the bad guys. Yeah, yeah, boom. I'm like, get him, Jack, get him. And then he settles down for a minute. I said, do we get all the bad guys, Jack? He says, yeah, we got them. You should get Henry. So I pull Henry out of the crib. All right, Jack, way to go, buddy. Let's go downstairs. Direct quote from my 3.5-year-old as we walked out of Henry's room. Daddy, we saved the day. nothing can stop us now. Which reminded me of a few verses. If God is for us, who can be against us? Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall trouble or hardship or persecution or famine or nakedness or danger? No. In all these things, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. For I am convinced that neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, neither the present nor the future, nor any powers, neither height nor depth, or anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus our Lord. So my brother Josh went off to college and he played football at Wheaton College in the Midwest. And his freshman year, as he's training for football and trying to figure out how to be a college student, he gets these phone calls once in a while from Adriana. She's still in her senior year at Claremont High School. And Adriana calls and checks in, and Josh checks in on her, and Adriana still goes over to our family's house, and my mom cooks meals for her. And this is, I guess, at the end of Josh's freshman year at Wheaton, early May, he receives a phone call from Adriana. And Adriana asks Josh if he would come back and take her to her senior prom. Josh didn't even know that she knew about the prom. But he said yes. And he came home, and she got a dress, and he wore a suit, got the flower on her wrist. I came home from college so that I could drive them in the family Suburban, wheelchair in the back. And I dropped them off in front of the ballroom, and I parked on the sidewalk, and I watched as my brother Josh pushed Adriana in her wheelchair down the pathway into the open doors of the auditorium. And then I could see from where I was parked as hundreds of students lined up to watch last year's star quarterback push Adriana into her senior prom. She didn't dance. Josh didn't even dance. But he loved Adriana and those other students. And he set an example for that high school, and he changed that high school. If you go to Claremont High School today on a Friday, you will see football players in jerseys pushing wheelchairs. Because Josh persevered, Josh didn't give up. He didn't allow a little bit of criticism to force him to stop. So let me be the voice of Oz Guinness to you today. Imagine that we're sitting across a table at a coffee shop or a pub somewhere in Europe, and I'm telling you, the revolution is still on. There is still something for you to do. You are not done yet. Do not give up. Do not stop now. God went the distance for you. You can continue with him. There is more for you. Don't listen to the noise. If you're on a mission from God, it'll motivate you and it'll matter to other people, and they are worth it. You can persevere through the difficulty, through the challenge. You can and you will. It is worth it. You can do it. We need you to be you and to do your unique mission from God and to persevere through it. God, let it be so. Give us the strength to persevere as we follow you. In Jesus' name.
Let's stand and respond.